Hello everyone, welcome to my presentation. This is actually our recent research on ransomware. It's a follow-up project on our previous study on ransomware that published last year at DIMBA. So the first question is, what is a ransomware attack? Ransomware attack is a class of malware that locks the digital resources of the user and requests money. So after a successful ransomware attack, the user has two options. One is to pay the ransom fee with the hope of receiving the data back or permanently losing access to the data. So if the user agrees to pay the ransom fee, he will receive the private key that is generated remotely by in the CNC server and can be used for decrypting the files. This is a typical ransom note that is shown to user after successful ransomware attack. Depending on the ransomware family or the geographical location of the user, a different ransom note can be shown to the user. So the attack is very straightforward and it's very simple, and it has been in the wild since last decade. But the recent resurgence of this class of malware has resulted in increasing concern on how to detect or defend against this class of malware. For example, the recent attack on hospitals across the US, at least three hospitals were impacted by ransomware, were on the news. And universities in Canada was also impacted with ransomware. And last year, police department in Massachusetts had to pay the ransom in order to get the data back. So there is no estimation about the financial cost of ransomware, but a recent report shows that in just 3 months, more than $2 million were the amount that they made by data extortion from the user. So the attack is has impact, and it's destructive and make users suffer. So the question is how we can detect or defend against this class of malware. There are at least three approaches that can minimize the risk of ransomware. One is, and the most important one, is educating the end user. For example, having a reliable backup policy for the user can help them. Or teaching them for having a safe browsing on a web. For example, not clicking every link they see or opening every attachment that they have in their email. And two, developing tools that help defenders and reverse engineers to get insight about internal behavior of a ransomware. For example, how the crypto system works, how the keys are generated, how the keys are maintained by the crypto system. And three is protection approaches that can sit on the end user machine, monitor the wide system, and detect ransomware and kill once it starts encrypting the user's data. In this talk, we are talking about the second approach, which is a detection tool that helps researcher and reverse engineers to get insight about internal behavior of this class of malware. So this is our threat model. In our threat model, we assume that ransomware, like any other classes of malware, can use any techniques to attack the user. For example, they can inject code into the context of benign application in order to evade some well-known detection techniques, or perform encrypted communication with the CNC server to consult about the client and, for example, get the private key, the public key. And three is that we assume that it can use any customized or standard crypto system in order to attack the user file. We also assume that the OS kernel the hardware and software stack in the kernel are free from malicious code. This is actually a fair assumption because all of the ransomware samples that are in the wild are in the user mode and they don't attack the kernel driver in kernel. So in our approach and the tool that we develop is try to detect ransomware and analyze them during the detection phase. It's not an end user protection approach. And it can be used on top of dynamic analysis system as a public service and provide insight about the ransomware. And it can be used for sample sharing about, for reverse engineers, for researchers, and for the defenders. So, but the question is how we can detect a ransomware sample. Unlike other classes of malware that try to be as stealthy as possible, in ransomware attacks, when you are infected with ransomware, you are informed that you are infected. Or there are some distinct behavior that ransomware has. Because encryption, for example, is involved in the attack, there is an entropy change in the content of the files, right? Or because the malicious process wants to encrypt as many as files as possible in order to maximize the chance of getting money from the user, you see iteration over the files. Or you see a modal dialogue that shows that the user is infected. So if we use these high-level heuristics and translate them into concrete defense approaches, it's possible to detect a significant number of ransomware in the wild. So the rest of this talk is actually the introduction of the tools and techniques we used and the evaluation of our approach to detect ransomware. So our approach is a system that sits in the kernel and perform system-wide process monitoring and the interaction of the process with the file system. And for requests like read and write, we calculate the entropy of the data block when they want to, for example, touch a file. We collect some other things that I'm going to talk about in the following slides. So in order to detect ransomware, we have to address two classes of ransomware. One is cryptographic ransomware that attack the user files, and the other is desktop locker that simply locks the desktop. So in order to detect cryptographic ransomware, we generate a fake but attractive environment for the malware to run, and then sit in the kernel and look at the interaction of the process with the file system. So the question is, why we generate fake user environment? There are a couple of reasons for that. The first reason is we want to make the dynamic analysis system as realistic as possible. And two, we want to protect the analysis environment from certain user environment fingerprinting techniques that a malware can use. For example, an static environment analysis is very straightforward for the malware to find out. Regardless of the fact that the sample is running in a bare metal environment or in a VM, right? So in order to do that, we want a strategy. So in order to generate the content, we generate files with real and valid content. The content look realistic. We distribute them randomly but meaningfully on the disk. And the metadata of the files are designed to simulate real user files. For example, the creation, the modification, and the access time are designed in such a way that the malware cannot easily detect whether it's automatically generated. So we generate the content and sit in the kernel. And run the malware and log the interaction with the file system. So we collect the time, the process name, the process ID, the request in form of IRP, the argument of the request, and the entropy of the data buffer in case it's read or write. We analyze a wide range of ransomware families during our analysis, and we found that regardless of what or how a ransomware attacked the user in order to compromise it or being installed in the machine, the low-level file system activity are very similar. For example, CryptoLocker and CryptoWall are two different ransomware families, but because they were using the same crypto API, they were generating very similar IO activity in the low-level file system requests. So based on that, we categorize all the samples that we have based on their file system access request, and we find out there are only three different classes based on the current ransomware attacks. And the first one, for example, opens the file and reads the low entropy data and overwrite it with the high entropy data. And in the second one, what happens is that an encrypted version of the files is generated and is saved in some part of the disk, and the original file is simply unlinked or deleted from the disk. But the attacker found out that it's easy for the victim to recover those data that were unlinked from the disk, so they changed their strategy, and once they generated the encrypted version of the file, they overwrite the original one with the random data, a form of secure deletion on the original files. These are three ransomware families that follow those IO access requests. For example, CryptoWall read the low entropy data and overwrite it with high entropy data. A file coder simply deletes the original data by unlinking from the disk. And the third one, CryptVault, uses a different crypto system and overwrites the original data with some random bytes, so having a sort of secure deletion function. In addition to those three different IO requests, because the attacker wants to maximize the chance of forcing the user to pay, the malicious process encrypt as many files as possible. So you see iteration over the files. Regardless of what extension a file has, you see exactly the same requests among different files by the same process. That was actually our approach to detect crypto style or cryptographic ransomware. In order to detect desktop locker ransomware, what we did was that first we take a snapshot of the clean state of the system and run the malware, and then capture another snapshot of the system. So if a ransomware attack has happened, there is a ransom note that's shown to the user. And because it is shown to user and it's persistent, there is a structural change between the content of pre and post attack images. So we define a score called the similarity score that compares the structural differences between two images. So the similarity score is between 0 and 1. The values close to 1 means that there is a huge structural change in the image, and the values close to 0 means there's not significant changes in the content of the image. In order to test the system and run our tool to test with real-world samples, we use Kaku Sandbox. The reason is that in order to provide, it actually provides us with basic sandboxing services, and we use Windows XP for that because it is mainly supported by Kaku, but Unveil can be installed on any operating system, any Windows operating system by just attaching to the file system driver. We use the Windows kernel driver framework, which is formally supported way to develop monitoring services like antivirus companies and antivirus scanners, and also backup software use more or less the same approach. And for those that are in malware research, they know that running and finding an active malware is very hard, is not easy. So in order to make the system resilient against these fingerprinting techniques, what we did was making Kaku more resilient about this fingerprinting by changing certain codes to in Kaku Sandbox in order to return fake response to certain fingerprinting techniques, like for certain processes or registry keys. Of course, there are more sophisticated ways to fingerprint the environment. We were not able to do anything about them, but these are the more straightforward approach that we were able to address. We also use other anti-evasion measures, like defining multiple NTFS drives or changing the IP address or MAC address. These are the things that we did. You can check out the paper for more details about our configuration. We tested the system with our label and data, ground truth data, with 3,500 malware samples we collected from public repositories, Anubis, and two security companies. From those 35,000 samples, 1,900 of them were active during the analysis. And we also use some benign application, including the ransomware-like programs, for example, Descript, AES-Crypt, S-Delete, in order to make our dataset having both benign and malicious dataset. This is actually one of the false negative cases that we had. You see a structural change in the image, but because it's not the dissimilarity score is not significant because it's transparent, we were not able to detect that. So in order to detect these cases and have a higher coverage of the data, we perform an test by varying the dissimilarity threshold. And we found that at 0.32, we have the highest recall with 100% precision on the label data set, which means that if we detect a sample as ransomware, it was 100% ransomware. We also test our approach with unknown data set, unknown samples. We collected 1,200 unknown samples every day from Anubis. We created an infrastructure with 56 Unveil enabled machines on 8 servers on Ganati cluster with the same threshold that I talked about in previous slide. We tested the system with 148,000 distinct samples. And in our approach, a new detection is if we detect a sample as ransomware, and we submitted to VirusTotal, and if VirusTotal reported as a malware or a ransomware, it was not a new detection. But if none of the AV scanners report anything malicious about that, we detected as label it as a new detection. We continue to submit the samples we detected as ransomware six times to VirusTotal in order to see whether the detection rate changes. We define a score called a pollution ratio, which is between 0 and 1, and the values close to 1 means that all the AV scanners in VirusTotal were able to detect a sample, and the values close to 0 means that none of the samples were detected by AV scanners. So as you see in the first submission, 72% of the samples had the pollution ratio 0, means that none of them were detected by AV scanners in the first submission. But in the second submission, the pollution ratio changed significantly. And as you see in the subsequent submission, there is no significant change on the pollution ratio, meaning that a sample is detected either by a large number of AV scanners or only by a small number of them. This is a summary of our detection result. We had zero false positive cases at the cost of not detecting all the ransomware in our data set. And as I mentioned, 72% of the samples were new detection. And we detected 9.2% of the samples that we detected were ransomware, including cryptographic ransomware and desktop blocker. Around 20% of those were desktop blocker. During our analysis, we also found a new ransomware family. We call it SilentCrypt. The reason we call it SilentCrypt was that after a successful attack, the process showed a ransom note and claimed that they are SilentCrypt team. So we used the same name for that. What happens was that it performed some sort of user fingerprinting in order to see whether they are running in a bare user environment or in an analysis or in a real user computer. And after consulting with the server and receiving the key, they started encrypting the user's file. And as you see in the third row, which is the write operation, it performed some techniques in order to evade potential behavioral-based approaches, like imposing delays, artificial delays between their operation. After a couple of rides, they imposed some delay and then started again. We submitted the sample to to VirusTotal, and after 2 days, they started reporting it as malicious. This is also the Google result in that time. The first one is the submission I had to YouTube about demo of the attack. The other are irrelevant Google results. So the conclusion of this work is that ransomware is a serious threat, and Unveil introduces concrete models, concrete detection techniques to analyze these class of malware. Detecting a new ransomware family shows that this approach is useful in practice and can be used without implementation costs on top of anti-malware tools and dynamic analysis system. Of course, our approach is not perfect, but we continue to improve the work. This field of research is an adversarial research, so we try to improve it and make it a public service for to be used by researchers and defenders and reverse engineers. Thank you so much. I would be happy to have your question answered.
Questions?
Hi, I'm Ryan from Google. So I had a question about your false positive rate. You said that you had like 9,000 new detections, but 0% false positives. How did you compute that?
How did I calculate that?
Yeah.
Okay, so for the desktop locker samples that were around 300 samples, 3,000 samples, we did it manually by just checking the post-attack images. If we see that the post-attack image is a ransom note, we report it as the correct detection. And for crypto-style ransomware, what we did was checking, sorting the files automatically and finding whether there is an iteration over the files, for example, the first five files, and see if the content of the files has an entropy change. So in our detection, we use entropy to double check our result. We didn't use entropy in order to, as a feature to report whether a sample is ransomware or not. We use it to double check whether the sample that we detected as ransomware is in fact ransomware or not.
Like, couldn't you also use that entropy just to like detect it as well?
Pardon?
Couldn't you use the entropy to detect it as well?
As a detection feature?
Yeah.
So it very good question. The problem with this is that there are certain cases that they have already high entropy. For example, the file is a compressed file. Has not very high, but it has high entropy. So the change between the read and write, the entropy of the read and write is not meaningful in order to report that as a change in the entropy of the file in order to report that as a ransomware. So we tried not to use that in our detection, but use it as a feature to evaluate our result.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
Very nice work. And just a quick question. These ransomware samples, when you run them on your environment, they almost always immediately start attacking. What if they actually wait? How long do you need to run them? How do you trigger them?
Okay. So other dynamic analysis system, our approach is also vulnerable to stalling code. We run the samples for 20 minutes, and with the assumption that the attack will start after 5-10 minutes. But if it wants to wait for 2 days, 1 day, 5 hours, so we were not able to detect anything. But if the sample start in 10 minutes, after 10 minutes of running the sample, and show malicious activity, we were able to detect that.
So typically in your experience, how soon does the attack start? 5 minutes, 1 minute, 10 minutes?
So we actually experimented that in our first phase of this project, and we found that after the 7-10 minutes, they start doing activity. This is actually what happened in our case.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
So this is just another question about the entropy check. I don't know if you mentioned it, but how many samples did you look at to kind of get a good feel for what the threshold should be, or is it a comparison for just a straight increase?
Well, good question. For the entropy change, we checked a couple of samples, like 250 samples, and we found that Because the samples that the sweet file or the honey files that we were using were mainly text, and we saw that, for example, an entropy change from 4, from 430, it's changed to, for example, above 7 means that a high entropy change. But as I mentioned, we didn't use that in our detection because it was something that can be evaded by the malware in future. So we didn't use that in detection. But for example, for the text file, we were able to confirm that, for example, there is a huge change in the entropy. This is what we can say.
Thank you.
All right, let's thank our speaker again.
Thanks.